What I'd give to hear those three little words. Man, that's such a wonderful phrase. To hear those three little words. That's all I'd live for the rest of my days.
Patricia T. O'Connor is here, author of a number of books on the English language and a regular contributor to our show. Hi, Pat. Welcome back.
Thanks.
And when Pat is here, we take your calls at 212-433-9692, talking about the English language, or you also can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org. And you have told us that you wanted to talk about something that I always have been fascinated by.
Yeah, I've been fascinated by this too, and it's a subject that's come up lately among linguists and in discussion groups. But one of the most recent things that happened was on November 30th, which was Mark Twain's birthday. The Huffington Post celebrated by running a selection of 27 of his notable quotations. And as the journalist Carl Cannon and a lot of other language commentators were quick to point out, only 10 of the 27 were authentic. Now, that's a...
17 is a lot wrong.
Yes, yes, indeed. At least 17. But Twain is one of those people who's known to be a quotation magnet, which is a term coined by Fred Shapiro, the author of the Yale Book of Quotations, for people who are frequently credited with saying things they didn't say.
Well, because they're witty.
They're known to be wits, yes.
And this sounds like something Mark Twain might have said.
Yes, and when a quote is catchy and it gets spread around and it's by some non-entity, or even worse, if it's anonymous, that great quote machine, Mr. Anonymous, people have a need to attach it to somebody familiar, especially somebody known to be a wit. And that's why so many people like Twain, Churchill, George Bernard Shaw.
Oscar Wilde, I assume.
Oscar Wilde, Lincoln, and, of course, Dorothy Parker. Mm-hmm. An awful lot of quotations attributed to them were not really authentic quotes by them. But, for example, Twain is often quoted as saying, golf is a good walk spoiled. Mm-hmm. And hundreds of thousands of websites attribute that to him. And he never said it. It was been traced to sometime in 1913 in an article in a Wisconsin newspaper.
Now, that 1913 is way after Mark Twain was dead.
Yes.
So people didn't realize that it hadn't popped up earlier?
I guess not. People are so... Well, I won't say gullible, but they like knowing who said something, and they like repeating it and saying, oh, as Mark Twain once said, mm-hmm. rather than just as someone once
said. So can I get away with that? As Mark Twain once said 47 years ago.
Lincoln is another one. In fact, some quotes are attributed to both Twain and Lincoln, and neither one of them said it. But Twain also didn't say... if you don't like the weather in New England, wait a few minutes.
Mm-hmm. And, I heard that as Mark Twain.
Yeah, he didn't say, I've never killed a man, but I have read many obituaries with great pleasure. Mm.
Do we know who wrote those things?
Well, let's see, that last one, let's see. I think that it was probably Clarence Darrow.
A man who... is unknown. Would think that he would have gotten the credit for that.
No, but a lot of people don't go around saying, as Clarence Darrow once said, right. or as Bennett Cerf once attributed falsely to so-and-so. You like to say who said something. But Twain was a devoted cigar smoker, and he was famous for saying that he had taken a pledge to smoke only one cigar at a time. I mean, he said some good things about smoking.
Well, I remember hearing, I don't know if he actually said it, but I've always quoted him, that quitting smoking is the easiest thing in the world. I know I've done it 100 times.
Well, yes.
He did say that?
He did not say that. That's one of his fake quotes. He said, supposedly, the usual version is, giving up smoking is the easiest thing in the world. I know because I've done it thousands of times. That joke actually was told by W.C. Fields, among others, and it was originally about either drinking or poker.
Mm-hmm.
So also, Twain never said, I've never let my schooling interfere with my education. But thousands of websites say he did. It was a 19th century essayist. And he didn't say, never put off until tomorrow what you can do the day after tomorrow.
Oh, I've heard that as his all my life.
Yeah, he never said it. Sorry. But another great quotation magnet, if Twain is the great American quotation magnet, as Fred Shapiro says, the great British quotation magnet is Churchill. Now, Churchill liked some of the things that were attributed to him and never bothered setting the record straight because they were so clever. But there's one, it's an apocryphal story, that Lady Astor told Churchill, if I were married to you, I'd put poison in your coffee.
I've heard this as Churchill so many times.
Yes, and he supposedly said, if I were married to you, I'd drink it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this has been, a lot of people swear to this. This is an exchange that supposedly took place in the 1920s. But Fred Shapiro has traced it to a joke that ran in the Chicago Tribune in 1900. So Lady Astor was not the American ambassadress at that time. But there's also, I know this because, Stuart and I have researched a lot of quotes about language, but Churchill is often supposed to have said, after someone corrected one of his sentences that ended with a preposition, he's supposed to have said, this is the sort of English up with which I will not put.
Mm-hmm.
It's an apocryphal story. He never said it. And he never described Britain and the United States as two nations divided by a common language. That's also attributed to him. And it's attributed to George Bernard Shaw, but neither one of them said it. But Shaw is a pretty good quote magnet. Nigel Rees, who compiled Brewer's famous quotations, once joked, when in doubt, ascribe all quotations to George Bernard Shaw.
And in this country, we've had, Samuel Goldwyn has gotten a lot of those quotes,
uh-huh.
And Yogi Berra.
Yogi Berra,
and
yes.
According to Carmine, who is a listener who's driving in Little Neck, he wanted to share this with us. Yogi Berra once said, I hope he really said it, a lot of things I said, I never really said.
Yeah. And we don't know if he said that.
Yes. But I'm sure that that's true.
Yes.
There were joke writers who actually were writing these lines with Yogi or Samuel Goldwyn mind. Well, the publicists for the studios loved that because it kept Samuel Goldwyn in the newspapers.
Oh, right. And also it made him sound so lovable and sort of bumptious.
When he was not lovable.
When he was a nasty studio head.
So why do you think we do this? Is just because it makes us feel a little more comfortable to put a name to the thing?
Yes, I think so. It's for the same reason that I'm always talking about false etymologies. You know, people will say that the expression is no road to hoe, or he has a tough road to hoe. And that's because of, and they'll make up some reason for it, when it's actually row to hoe. Mm-hmm. Or there are etymologies of words that people will invent because they don't like knowing that something is uncertain.
So
for instance,
the whole nine yards has about 85 different explanations.
Yes, it does, at last count. but as I think I reported a couple of months ago, I think people are getting closer to nailing it down. Keeps going back further and further, but no, it's not a funeral shroud or a machine gun ammunition belt.
So
probably,
what would be so terrible about saying a wit once said, whatever the thing is?
I don't know. I think it makes it sound like you're smarter if you're quoting someone rather than just if you say, as an anonymous person once said, you could be making it up.
So what about Dorothy Parker? Did she say you can lead a horticulture, but you can't make her think?
She did say that. Someone challenged her to use the word horticulture in a sentence, supposedly. And that's what she came up with.
But what about Pearls Before Swine? You know that one?
Yes.
Age Before Beauty, and she supposedly said Pearls Before Swine.
Yes, she was supposed to be going through a door at the same time as Clare Booth Lewis, and they were known to despise and loathe one another. And Clare Booth said, Age Before Beauty. And Dorothy swept by her and said, Pearls Before Swine. And Clare Booth Lewis denied that that ever happened. And Dorothy Parker's biographer, or one of them, has said he's never been able to authenticate it. So it may be legendary, but it's still a great story.
My guest is Patricia T. O'Connor. We invite your calls at 212-433-9692, or you can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org. Should we take some calls?
Yes.
And we can continue with these. You have a lot more?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good. Scott from New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Yes, Scott.
Enjoy the show. I have a misattributed quote that's a pet peeve where Jimmy Connors once said, he was talking about playing in New York, playing tennis in a tournament, and saying, oh, in New York, they love it when you spill your guts out there. But at Wimbledon, they make you go back and clean it up. Something like that, very close to that. And somehow this got attributed to Jimmy Carter, the president. and it's so illogical that it would be him. You know, it's not. Never heard him connected with sports. But it's one of those things that once it gets out on the internet, I guess these sites just copy each other.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So one attributed it to him, and then the other one does it. And I actually have the magazine where this discussion happened. And when I saw this, I wrote to one of those sites just saying, hey, you know, I think you got this wrong. Because they say, oh, if anybody knows, whatever, we'll correct. But, of course, they didn't. Just still stayed there. So I thought, well, I'm not going to dedicate my life to trying to change these things. But it's just odd.
Well, thank you for calling us, Scott.
Once something gets established on the internet, it's really tough to...
Now, in fact, a listener in Boston wrote, I'm troubled by the proliferation of fake quotations being spread on the internet, especially nowadays through Facebook. My two biggest pet peeves are the one attributed to Oscar Wilde, be yourself, everyone else is taken already, and a couple that are being attributed to A.A. Milne, promise me you'll always remember you're braver than you believe and stronger than you seem and smarter than you think. And if you live to be 100, I want to live to be 100 minus one day so I never have to live without you. Both of these come from Winnie the Pooh movies, not the original books. And we know that follow the money was not really something that happened during the Watergate thing. It's It was from the movie. We want to believe that these things actually happened. But How can we blame the internet? Because this process occurred way before there was internet.
It did. But the internet, I think, has made them indelible. You can't get information off the internet. Say a quotation book 50 years ago misattributed a quotation. Well, subsequent editions will come along. And when someone's looking up a quote, they're probably going to, if they want to be authentic, they'll look for a recent edition. But on the internet, there are no recent editions. Everything is still alive. And something that is fake looks just as good as something that's real.
And sources of information are often wrong. Mm-hmm. Wikipedia, for example, has gotten a number of things wrong about me. And Philip Roth tells the story of trying to correct something in his Wikipedia entry. They said that the human stain was inspired by some event, and he changed it. And then they changed it back because they said, well, he needed a corroborating source. He said, wait a minute, I'm the writer. That wasn't good enough.
Oh.
Elizabeth in Long Island City, wonders about the famous Mark Twain line, the coldest winter I ever spent was a summer in San Francisco.
Oh, yes. I've got that one somewhere.
Is that really Mark Twain?
Let me see. Where is that one?
Well, we're going to take a little break.
Yeah, I've got it here somewhere. I just don't know.
We'll take a little break. You look for it.
Okay.
And we'll take more listener calls when we come back. By the way, you can also just talk about the English language. It doesn't have to be these misguided or misquoted situations, but we love hearing them. Our number here is 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org. Stay with us for more.
Oh, what I'd give for that wonderful phrase, to hear those three little words. That's all I'd live for the rest of my days.
And Carmen McRae singing Three Little Words to get us into the second part of this conversation with Patricia T. O'Connor, who's the author of Woe Is I, Junior, Words Fail Me, You Send Me, and Origins of the Specious.
That does it.
Have I covered them all?
I think so.
And our number here is 212-433-9692. Or you can also write to us on our show page at WNYC.org. Let's go to some more calls. Michael from Lido, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, yes. I'm calling about the Harry Lime speech from The Third Man.
Yeah?
I read the book, the Graham Greene book. It doesn't have that speech about cuckoo clocks in Switzerland and all that.
Uh-huh.
So it leads me to believe that Orson Welles wrote that, said Graham Greene.
Yeah, the story is that
you
Orson
can always
Welles,
improve on Graham Greene, right?
Well, he didn't like to think so, but but Orson Welles supposedly threw that in. It was an impromptu ad lib on his part.
Thank you so much for your call.
Brilliant.
Now, you did find out about whether Mark Twain said that about the coldest day in...
Well, actually, what I found was close.
Mm-hmm.
Supposedly, he said, 24 years ago, I was strangely handsome. In San Francisco, in the rainy season, I was often mistaken for fair weather. A rather bizarre quotation.
But he actually said that.
Misattributed to him. It wasn't pinned on him until 1949.
Uh-huh.
No evidence
that.
He ever said it.
Okay.
But isn't that a strange quote?
Yes. Well.
Bizarre.
Peter from...
Glenridge.
Yeah, hi.
Hello. Hi, Patricia.
Hi.
While you got that book out, my question is, maybe we got some other Mark Twain. I don't want to be misquoting him. So can you confirm that this is a Mark Twain quote? Apparently, he had gone to see Wagner's The Ring, and you know what, it's like 5 hours long, and he was quoted as saying, Wagner's music isn't as bad as it sounds.
I came across that quote, too, and I think he did say it. I think he did say that. I didn't collect it here among my fake ones. So I think that was a true quotation.
Now, he did say a lot of witty things.
He said a great many witty things, and most of them are much wittier than the fake quotes, which is true of Dorothy Parker, too. But I guess you'd have to say if they were really witty, he would have thought of them, you know. But
do you know about the Dorothy Parker line that if all the girls at the Harvard-Yale game were... late end-to-end, I wouldn't be a bit surprised.
Yes. Actually, she said about the girls at the Yale prom.
Ah, okay.
If they were late end-to-end, she wouldn't be a bit surprised.
But Ken, I'm sorry.
A lot of hers were only semi-quotable. In fact, there are a lot on the...
That one comes close.
...from the Yale Book of Quotations that I can't even say on the air.
She must have been a lot
That's
of
how good
fun.
They are.
Ken from Wilton, Connecticut. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello. Hello, Patricia, and hello, Leonard. Years ago, when I was starting a company, I came across a quote that I wanted to use on the back of my business cards, but I didn't like the person that it was attributed to, so I invented a new attribution for it. The quote was, if you can't fit your idea on the back of a calling card, then you don't have a clear idea. At the time I had heard it, I had seen it was attributed to Moss Hart, the theatrical producer.
Mm-hmm.
Later, I seemed to find out that it might be from Belasco, a much earlier theatrical producer. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I changed calling card to business card and attributed it to J.P. Morgan. And I have on the back of my business cards for years now, as J.P. Morgan once said, if you can't fit your idea on the back of a business card, you don't have a clear idea. And then I go on to write a one-sentence explanation of what the company does.
Uh-huh.
I've heard that quote come back to me as J.P. Morgan's quote in the
years
since.
You mean you've helped propagate a misattribution?
Guilty as charged. I am curious, though, if Belasco is the real originator of the original quote.
I don't know. I can't say, but I think
he
calling cards
He still has a theater
were,
named after him.
Yes.
Well, I think calling cards were probably more common in Belasco's time than in Moss Hart's time. People didn't leave calling cards, did they?
Sure.
In the 30s and 40s?
Well, rather than what, Belasco, the 20s?
Well, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Who knows?
We have smart listeners. Maybe somebody will know the answer. Yvonne left this comment. Please comment on the JFK attributed line, ask not what your country can do for you. She said she read it in the treasured writings of Khalil Gibran.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm surprised to hear that. This is the first I've heard of it.
Well, I would not be surprised. That's the kind of thing that politicians, or in this case Ted Sorensen, might pick up from somebody else and say, well, that really works here.
Now I suppose next you're going to claim that JFK didn't say a jug of wine, a loaf of bread, and thou beside me singing in the wilderness.
FDR didn't say, didn't write the line, we have nothing to fear but fear itself. No, I don't know if that's true. I'm spreading rumors myself.
Well, he didn't start the phrase New Deal.
Adam, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. It's a pleasure.
Go ahead. You want to talk on the air?
Yeah, so I'm an English PhD student at Stony Brook. I was studying in Spain a few years ago, and a professor of the Spanish language told us this very long story. It took about half an hour, which, of course, we don't have, about the origin of the term pomegranate. And she basically said that it meant apple from Granada. But, of course, it means granular apple. And it's just something, I guess, kind of like there's probably no reason to think that French fries come from France, I guess.
Well,
I think that
often what we've discussed here, Pat, is the idea that people come up with what they think are logical explanations for words or phrases, mm-hmm. and then they start just using them. Is that called a back formation?
Yes, yes. And pomegranate, according to the good old American Heritage Dictionary here, says that it comes from Middle French, pomme for apple and granate for having many seeds. And as you know, pomegranates are all seeds. So that makes sense.
Ken asks, I use the plural courts martial. I've heard others use court martials and always thought them an error. On NPR this morning, a reporter combined the two into courts martials.
I think you settle for one or the other.
Which one
do you
prefer?
I think it's courts martial.
But everybody says all the
They all say court martials. Well, let me see if the dictionary
No,
has
I think
an
that
opinion.
you're right.
Isn't it courts
but
martial?
I've been seeing a move away from all of those S's in the first word in a lot of different phrases.
So you mean they're going to start saying mother-in-laws?
Oh, yeah. Unfortunately, they do, yes.
Huh. Well, let me see. Court martial isn't even in the dictionary? Oh, yes, courts martial. There it is. Courts martial is the official plural, but who knows? The next edition may have court martials. That's the way these things go.
We go now to Eric from Harding, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Leonard. Great stuff, Patricia. Winston Churchill, did he say the following? If you're young and not liberal, it means if you're young and you're not liberal, it means you don't have a heart. And if you're old and you're not conservative, it means you don't have a brain. Is that true? He said that, or a version of that?
No, it's believed that he couldn't have said that. The quote usually goes, if you're not a liberal when you're 25, you have no heart. If you're not a conservative by the time you're 35, you have no brain. But there's no record of anybody hearing him say this. And
he actually was a conservative at 15 and a liberal at 35, so it's unlikely he would have turned his own philosophy around to make that quote.
And then he became a conservative again.
Yes, yes.
We go now to Missy from Chappaqua. Hi, Missy.
Hi, good afternoon. Hi, Patricia.
Hi.
I love your show.
Thanks.
I have a question about a quote that I've heard possibly attributable to Mark Twain about a weed is just a plant with a bad PR agent. Have you heard anything about
that? Well, would there be PR agents during Mark Twain's time?
No, I don't know that the term PR, I'm pretty sure it wasn't around.
Exist.
Yeah, I know. That's definitely a fake.
Okay, but, well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
But actually, I would say that, although that's witty, anyone who's had to deal with weeds next to other plants would say it's also just not true.
Yeah.
Weeds, there are some wonderful weeds out there, some beautiful weeds.
Of course.
But if weeds invade your garden and start taking over and killing all the other plants, well, they need a good PR agent.
Yeah, or you just need a good gardener.
Jeff from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Leonard and Patricia. A subset of these misattributed quotes are last words, and you know it's tied in with this 19th and earlier cult of the good death, and I, you know, one of the best is Stonewall Jackson, as last words were supposedly, come, let us cross the river and rest under the shade of the trees, and William Pitt supposedly, his last words were, what shades we are, what shadows we pursue, and I just wondered if you could comment on either of those or some of the others.
I can't comment on those specifically, but it's...
You don't have all those things on your fingertips?
Well, no, I don't. But I do have a general comment, and that is that it's like those dying scenes in operas and plays. Generally, when you really are breathing your last, and I've been at a few deathbeds, unfortunately, most of us have after we reach a certain age, and people don't say last words like that. They generally are asking for a glass of water.
Right. Yeah, you
can
know,
I have
saving
another
up a bit,
shot on the morphine pump, please?
You're not saying
sort of
some
thing.
Saving up some witty line
no,
to go out.
No, they're
with.
Not making a speech.
Or W.C. Fields was supposed to say, "I'd rather be in Philadelphia."
Yeah.
We go now to Ken from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hello. I always love this section of your show, Leonard and Patricia. It's always great to hear you. I have a couple things. I think the Mark Twain quote about Wagner, I think it's more, I believe he said, Wagner's music is better than it sounds. And so that's a little bit more like Twain than
But you want to talk good. About Shakespeare, and Shakespeare has got does it's deserve a lot of credit, but he not all the credit he's been given.
Well, the Shakespeare, what I'm talking about is that it's not misattributed, but it's a misquote. It's the famous one with Falstaff where people around a table always say discretion is the better part of valor with that, you know, incredible wise look on their face. But it's really the better part of valor is discretion is the correct quote. And it's a humorous line because Falstaff delivers it after getting up from pretending that he's dead. Mm. And, you could probably do a whole show on misquotes from Shakespeare.
I did. I think a couple of years ago I talked about misquotes from the Shakespeare and the Bible.
Let's sneak in one more call. Antonia from Glen Cove. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. This isn't about a quotation, but I was just wondering how you felt about the usage of the word like in all of our conversations, like I was like and she was like and...
And
is
it was
that
like.
Not like is that not like fingernails on a chalkboard to you?
Well, a lot of things used to be like fingernails on a chalkboard to me, but over the years I've mellowed, and I actually kind of like that use of like. It's the quotative like, and it is useful. You can use it to quote something that wasn't said verbatim, or quote an attitude, a gesture, more than words.
But for people
like
of
so
a
upset.
Certain age,
yeah,
like just appears in every phrase. Not even, I can't even say every sentence, in every part of a sentence.
Right, right.
Because it is the filler that has replaced or well, or, well, it hasn't replaced you know yet.
It sort of replaced He Goes.
Uh-huh.
Remember, when we were younger, people would say, well, He Goes, how are you? And I go, well, not so good.
But now it's He Goes
now
Like.
Now it's Like. He's Like, and I'm Like.
He Goes
or
Like.
Or He Goes Like.
Yeah.
Yeah, or he was Like.
Pat, we have pretty much run out of time. People can contact you.
Yes.
How?
Write to me at mailbox@grammarphobia.com.
And so they can ask you about
they can ask questions.
Or talk to you about things that we normally discuss
on the
show.
It may take me a few weeks to answer, but because some of these things take some research. But, yes, I will answer everyone who writes.
And people can also find other things that result from this show or other places where you discuss
searchable.
Grammatical matters at grammophobia.com. And important for our listeners, because we couldn't get everybody on the air, you will return to our show on January 16th.
So see you then.
That's a whole month, Pat. I don't know if I can handle
it. I know.
Meanwhile, you can go to the bookstore or the library and find a lot of books that Patricia T. O'Connor has written. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you for having me.